this week on The Inside Flap.
I also like the research. Not every writer wants to go out and do it, but I enjoy it, and I think it lends a little bit of authenticity to my books.
Yeah,
I want to have that. You know, I write fiction, and I write to entertain. That's first and foremost, that's what I do. But I also want to make it as real as possible so people can think, oh, this really might happen.
So she had to shake him awake so she could get past him.
Oh, okay.
Right?
So he's on the aisle, she's at the window.
He did not appreciate it, exactly right, Dave, getting woken up, right? So as we're landing, he starts basically claiming that she shook him so violently that she injured his shoulder.
No, come on.
I swear to you.
Oh, man.
And he's a piece of work.
Yeah, and so she's been drinking, so she's like, oh, so that's how you make your money.
I just had that thought, too.
Frivolous lawsuit.
The Inside Flap is available on demand and every week on iTunes, Spotify, and around the world on theinsideflap.com. What more can we do for you?
Podcasting live from Littleton, Colorado. This is the Inside Flap Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. My name is Dave Medicus, and welcome to the show. Seated across the room, to my slight right, is Laura Medicus.
Howdy.
Howdy, and resting comfortably on the couch, to my left, that is Andrew Dowd.
Excelsior.
Excelsior. Thank you for tuning in to episode 241 of the Inside Flap Book Podcast. We appreciate you hopping on board. We got a great show for you today. We're joined by New York Times and USA Today bestselling author Allison Brennan. Her books include The Sorority Murder and Love Me to Death. Her new book out now is The Missing Witness. Had a great chat with Allison, and we'll have that for you in just a bit, along with our
book reviews.
Book recommend. You know, we need to get them. You know, I took my iPad, and this is, you can, if you are hearing the sound of my voice right now, what you're hearing when you hear the little sound effects, those little sound effects are brought to you on my iPad. And I brought it to school today because we played a little improv game with, it was a game called The Dating Game. And I used this
fun
for it. But they all got to experience all the different buttons on the thing and all the different little sound effects that we have on here.
Boy.
I think I had a great time, but I was playing them these little things right here.
Andrew Dowd.
And they're like, "Well, how did you do that?" And I said, "What do you mean? How did I do that?" And I was like, "How did you get them to say your name like that? Like, how does that
Dave Medicus.
How does that work?" That's why I got some kids to sing it, and I recorded it. And they're like, oh, I want to do it. So maybe,
That'd be fun.
We might have to get
I'd
some.
I'd like that.
Got some freshmen
fresh blood.
Who are really excited about that. So,
I'd love that.
We might look forward to, in the near future, some new sound effects.
I'm open to different rhythms as well.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Well, I've got a few kids who are interested, so I'll put that by them. Mm-hmm. Yes, Andrew.
So the dating game.
Yes.
Is such like an 80s thing.
Yeah. I know.
Right? And it isn't just the music. It's the whole concept of like the idiom game. But I'm just wondering, what did the kids have to say about the music?
Well, the thing they said about the music is that one kid actually knew that that was the music for the match game. And they're like, that's the match game. That's not the dating game. And I'm like, yeah, how do you know about the match game? And they're like, well, cable TV. And none of them had heard anything about the dating game.
Oh, they
like,
hadn't?
Like none of them.
Chuck Lorre, right?
Didn't do any.
Yeah.
No, that, I think that was the Love Connection.
What?
Oh, you know what? I might have watched the Love Connection.
It was Jim Lang.
There were different dating games.
Right. There were a couple different dating games.
I think Chuck hosted something of that sort.
Chuck Lang or Chuck, somebody hosted the Gong Show. Chuck,
I think that was Chuck Woolery.
Chuck Lorre.
No, Woolery, I think.
Chuck Woolery hosted the Love Connection.
Oh.
Yes, definitely.
That sounds right.
Chuck Woolery was hosted the dating game on Wikipedia.
You're looking this up right now. Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Brad Sherwood and Chuck Woolery.
Well, in any case, it makes for a great improv game, and we had a lot of fun with that.
Oh, yeah, that is a good improv game.
It really is, because you get three contestants, and you give each contestant a different quirk, and the host, there's a host, and then the person who's looking for a date has to guess what the different quirks
are. You know the weird thing about the dating game, that when we were watching it, what we didn't realize is that everyone up there was an aspiring actor or actress. Yes.
Steve Martin was an early contestant.
On this Wikipedia page, it has a list of all the contestants, and they all have their own Wikipedia page. It is a lot of famous people.
Yeah, it's not just...
it's not like Average Joe's looking for a date.
Right.
And I believe they even had serial killers on the show.
Oh.
Seriously.
You know what? I heard something about that. Huh. Did I? Why
really?
I
didn't hear
something
about that.
Well, Katie watches Dateline and stuff, and I swear to you, I'm pretty sure that came up.
That does sound familiar. Huh. You know, Bob Saget, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Tom Selleck. I mean, Suzanne Summers.
Right.
So people who are household names.
That's funny.
It was getting exposure as a young actor or actress.
Yeah. It's just weird, though, because we didn't know they were actors. No. I just thought they were real people.
And that's not to be confused with the Newlywed Game hosted by Bob Eubanks, whose career took a turn when he was on Roger and Me and told some dirty jokes and some inappropriate things he said on the Michael Moore documentary. But... yeah, so yes, it was real.
Oops.
It was comedians who were appearing on the dating game.
Huh.
But anyway, let's move on with the show.
That is fascinating. Yeah, if you're interested, I mean, the Wikipedia page on this is very interesting.
Okay, we'll have to take a look at that. Yeah. But anyway, so now listen, I love being a teacher. I love working with kids. They keep me youthful. They make me laugh. They challenge me to keep things interesting in the classroom. But listen, the great thing about being a teacher, the biggest great thing is there's three reasons to become a teacher, and that is June, July, and half of August, and that's your summer vacation. But you get a lot of sick days. So we accrue a sick day per month, basically.
Do you really?
Yes.
Do they only last for that school year?
No, they add up, they stack up. Is it frowned upon if you take a sick day every single month? Yes, it is.
Sure.
But we get them. And we also get three personal days a year. We have to put in a request and you're granted personal days as well.
Wait, you only get one a month?
One sick day a month. Yes.
I feel like...
So 10 a year.
Oh, okay. That's pretty good.
Hang on. Let's put it in perspective.
That's pretty good.
So you get 12 sick days a year
and
you get three personal days.
Right.
So you get a total of 15 days off.
That's a lot.
Indeed.
So now hang on. Now, are there any floating days?
Well, I float in the pool when I'm taking a day off.
That's not what
I don't know what you mean.
What do you mean by a floating day?
What is a floating day?
Well, so
yes, that's what I'm saying. They accrue. So if you don't take them, they add up. Is that what you mean?
No.
You mean something else.
They're different categories. So when I look at like working in the corporate world, you get vacation, also known as PTO.
Mm-hmm.
You get another bucket, which is sick days.
Okay.
And then sometimes you have a bucket typically called floating days.
I don't know what that means.
And floating days are days where...
I don't know what that is either.
Maybe you would have gotten it as a holiday, but hey, Christmas fell on a Saturday this year.
Oh, sure. And it becomes like a national holiday, but some people get it off, some people don't.
Yeah. And so the thing I have is like, I thought my new job, I get a ton of vacation.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you get 20 days off.
Wow.
But...
oh, they're including the stupid floating days.
Well, that and the sick days.
Oh, yeah. Well, I know when the last time I had a corporate job, which was a very, 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 very long time ago.
Shout out to New York City.
Last Century.
What was that firm? What was the firm you worked for?
I worked at Perkins and Will. When I started at Perkins and Will, I had vacation and sick. Then they decided to be cheap and they lumped it all together.
They lumped it all together. Yeah. And then
which isn't fair.
Well, and that isn't great. But it's okay if they lump it all together and you can use it any way you want.
You can use it any way you want, but then it encourages people to come to work sick.
I mean,
it just does.
And that's right. I mean, that is true too.
It really does.
And then I have the opposite problem in that a large portion of my vacation are sick days, which I can't really take. Technically, you can't take them as vacation You have to take them as sick days.
Oh, right? Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah, so then you're like, well, you know, I can't really like use this on a, I'm planning to take a Friday off. I can't say 2 weeks from now I'm taking a sick day.
I wonder too, like with everyone working from home, a lot of people, most people in corporate jobs work from home now. Like if I'm sick, I still probably am working because I can prop myself up and I don't want to take. So I wonder if the corporate, I feel like you don't take a sick day probably if you work from home.
When in a lot of it, you don't. You just really do just work through it.
You just work through it.
And I think the hours are long. I mean, that's a problem, I think, now with the, all the remote stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The corporations are taking advantage of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's no protection for that kind of stuff.
No, and they like to say, oh, people aren't working. No, they're working even more.
More, in most cases. Not
everybody.
Not everybody, but I think in most cases, no. What I like to do is, when I want to take a sick day a few weeks out, I'm like, you know,
right.
I'm having a little hemorrhoid procedure.
Oh.
That's what I got
you
scheduled
just float
this
that
Friday.
Idea.
That I just float that. And they don't ask questions.
Right. No.
Well, see, in teaching, what they throw around a lot now is teachers throw around this word, which is mental health day. I'm taking a mental health day.
Oh, do they really?
Yeah. But so that's what we say.
I think that's legitimate.
It is.
It absolutely is. But
that's been around
the
for
is,
a while, too.
When you're a teacher, you have to put it in. Cause if you, let's say you wake up one morning, you feel sick, you put in for a sick day. The problem is you can't get it. Nowadays, you cannot get a sub in the building at that short notice. So now you have to have other teachers you work with cover your class for you. And sure, they get paid, but nobody wants to come in on their off period when they might be doing planning, they might be grading, they might be running out to the store to get something for their class. Hey, maybe they're just going for a run, like some people I know.
Dave,
all right? So they don't want to have to cover another class. So that's why you put in a sick day ahead of time so you can get a sub in the building so you don't inconvenience your fellow teachers.
I haven't taken like an actual sick day. I can't even remember.
And I wouldn't want to take a sick day when I'm sick because I want to enjoy myself, which leads me to what I did yesterday.
What I'll do is I'll like work a little bit and then go lay down and then go work a little bit more and then go lay down. Yeah.
Now, I don't know what floating days are because we only get 2.5 weeks at Christmas. So I don't know. I don't. I'm only a week
would
in
know
the spring and only a week in the fall.
And then you're looking at somebody. I don't get any paid time off. So
This is where I take my middle finger and I am scratching my temple. Yes. And Dave's general direction.
This is what I will tell you at any point. And anybody who out there in the sound of my voice is saying, you teachers have it easy. Well, you are welcome to come into. In fact, tomorrow we have 90-minute blocks. You are welcome to come into my theater class, and I will hand over the reins to you. After which, you will say, "Well, hey there, Dave. You
are
earning every single cent of your salary anyway, which is not much. Okay, which is why we have teacher salaries." So I took a mental health day, took Sylvia up to Copper Mountain where we took our annual, semi-annual, not enough annual ski trip. And a couple things that I would like to point out if any of you are getting ready to head up to Copper Mountain. And that is this. So we get up there and it's not that far away. It's maybe an hour and 15 minutes without any traffic. We get into the lot, we park. And there are shuttle buses that will take you. Now, there are three separate villages. Andrew, do you ever ski Copper?
Yeah.
Okay. So there are three, you know, there are three separate villages. There's East, Center Village, and West Village. And the closest village to where you park at the free lot is East Village. And now you could hop on a shuttle bus that'll take you to Center or West. Or you could just, there's a big sign that says 7-minute walk to East Village. I said to Sylvia, I said, aha, we are looking at all those schmucks standing in line. There's 40, 50 deep waiting on that shuttle bus. We are going to walk. We're going to take the 7-minute walk to East Village. We're going to rent our skis and we'll be good to go. And she says, I like the way you think. 7 minutes is no time at all. So we get out.
Also, when they say 7 minutes, like it's probably 5 for you guys.
Exactly. And it was. It was 5-minute walk to East Village, walk in there. I scan my credit card. We get our rental skis. The guy, and here's the weird thing. So the guy who's giving us, we get the rental skis, no problem. The woman goes, you guys can ski blues comfortably, right? And Sylvia looks her dead in the eyes and lies. Oh, yeah. No, I'm skiing blues all the time. And if you don't know anything about skiing, blues are intermediate. Green is easy. black is difficult, and then double black is extreme. Andrew likes the double black. Andrew,
oh, heck, heck no.
What do you like? You like the, what do you ski? You'll ski the
you
black.
You do blues. Probably.
I like the intermediates. Yeah. You know, a black here or there. Mm-hmm. Okay. Double blacks, no thank
okay.
you.
Okay. Well, here's a guy with two thumbs sitting on the couch speaking right now who likes the greens. And Sylvia as well. So we get there. And I mean, I don't have any problem skiing the blues, but we're just there to have fun once a year. We don't want to risk injury. So she said, yeah, no problem. We can ski the double. Then the guy comes up and he says, oh, I'm going to get you your poles. I said, great. We'll take some poles to ski as well. So he makes this whole to-do about he has Sylvia hold out her arms at a 90-degree angle. Yeah. He takes the pole, holds it. He stands back. This is like a 19-year-old kid. He looks half-stoned. He's staring at her arms. He's looking. He like literally reaches his arm out, pushes her arm up so a little bit so it's at a 90-degree angle. And he's staring at it. He says, oh, good, 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 good. You take these. And then he looks at me. He goes, you, sir? Let me take a look here. And then he rustles back to where the poles are. He's scrounging around, grabs a few more, hands them to me, looks at. He said, put your arm out at 90-degree. I said, okay, no problem.
Like that? Like you're skiing. Okay, not hailing a cab.
Not that high up. No, you've got your arm by your side.
Okay, I understand.
Your elbow is tucked in, and you're holding your arm out.
Okay.
Parallel to the ground.
Like I would hold a cup.
Holding a cup of tea.
Mm-hmm.
And so he stands back, looks at my arm, he says, sir, this looks perfect for you. Perfect. Great. I said, thank you very much, sir. I appreciate your assistance. I didn't say that, but I was thinking that. Grabbed it because it looked like literally he was taking some deep thought and care into selecting the proper poles for Sylvia and myself. Now, mind you, Sylvia is 6 inches shorter than I am. Grab our poles. We head out. Now, the first problem we run into is we look at the East Village, and there is one. And at each village, there are different lifts that will take you up the mountain and you ski down. So we look at the East Village map. We see blues. We see blacks.
Oh.
And there's a big sign there saying, no beginner terrain.
Oh.
And with the green right there.
Sure.
And I said, aha, so we have a little bit of a problem. Are you comfortable if we take... Now, to get to the Center Village, you gotta schlep it out there. It's all the way, I don't know how far it is. We don't know. I said, are you comfortable with taking the lift up and then taking a blue over to Center Village? Because that's where we want to be, because that's where all the greens go off.
Mm-hmm.
She says, you know what? I don't think I'm comfortable.
No, it's her first time skiing in a year.
At 3 years.
Three?
We determined 3 years.
Oh.
3 years. She's a senior in high school, 3 years since she skied.
Wow.
She said, I don't think I'm ready to get on blue. I said, you know what? Good. You know, you are so smart. You're thinking correctly.
So when you say your annual ski trip, you
right.
lie.
No, that's what I said. It's semi-annual, not enough annual.
I see.
We're already planning next year's trip, maybe more than one.
Yeah.
So I said, I will. Let's grab our skis, throw them on the shoulder, and we'll start walking our way. I said, Center Village is that way. There's a bunch of condos there. I said, it can't be that far. Let's walk. Mm. So we start walking. And then I see over the crest, we crest a little hill, and we see people sliding down the hill, some figures off in the distance. I said, let's go. That's got to be close to where the lift is. And again, there's condos. So you can't, it's up and down. There's hills, it's left and right. You can't get a good eyesight on where the next lift is at Center Village. I said, it's got to be around this bend. And we get to that bend. No, it's got to be around the next bend. So we see these figures sliding down the hill. And as we get closer, and again, our skis, we're carrying our skis, our rentals. And at this point, I've got both our skis on my shoulders because Sylvia is getting tired of carrying her skis. It's about 15 minutes so far.
But you don't just have your skis, you've got your ski boots on.
And we're wearing our ski boots. Exactly right. Thank you, Andrew. We're tromping through.
They're not necessarily meant for comfortable walking,
no.
right?
No.
Yeah.
Your ankles are locked in a position, they're rigid. You can't walk in them. You're tromping.
Was she upset with you yet?
I was more upset at myself.
Okay.
So I kept yelling at myself, and I was like, gee, F this, F that.
Oh.
Wow. So, no, it's okay. It's okay. It's okay.
Hmm.
So we get close. The figures we see sliding down are not skiers. They're like little 3 and 4 year old kids.
Is it tubing?
And they're tubing.
Yeah.
And in order for us to get to where we think the center village is, we have to go cut through
the tubers.
Where the tubers are going down. And as we do this, and we're kind of like trying to walk fast in between, there's
this
like a group of 30 or 40 tubers.
So you're playing Frogger on the ski slope.
Yes, exactly. But meanwhile, there are these helicopter parents who are glaring at us as we're scooting through these tubers. Like, what the hell? There's nobody else in skis anywhere near where we are.
Sure.
There's condos to the right, and there's this little tubing area.
That's so embarrassing.
And I am like, what is going on? Where are all the skiers?
This is so embarrassing.
And you can see up on the mountain in the distance, you see people skiing, but that's way, way, way off in the distance. Mm. So we cut through the angry glares of the parents. And I'm like, all right, so let's just go over here to this parking lot here. So we actually strapped on the skis, and we skied down like a 60-second ski to this parking lot.
So, Dave, let's face it.
Yes.
As a teacher, you're really used to the angry glares of the parents.
That's true. Yes, absolutely.
Nothing
new. So this is nothing new for me. So we get to the parking lot.
And Sylvia works in an after-school program, so she is too.
Yeah, exactly. And meanwhile, this has been about 30 minutes since we've gotten our equipment. We get to the parking lot, and I see a guy there. He's getting his car. I'm like, sir, we're trying to find the West Village. And he says, oh, you can just go over. And he points back to where we came from.
Oh.
He said, you can just go up to the East Village, take the lift up, and ski over to the center village.
Oh.
And we're like, sir, we are looking for the greens, not the blues and blacks.
Yeah.
And then the guy goes, and he gives us one of these, like he's directing traffic.
Oh, no.
And he's pointing over and over again with his hand, as in, keep walking, keep walking, keep walking. I said, seriously? I said, we're very tired. He said, well, there's a shuttle bus, but it's that way. And he points
back,
like back and to the right, like JFK, back and to the left from where we were. So we tromp back to where, in the direction he's pointing, we finally get the shuttle bus. And as we get to the shuttle bus stop, she has almost slipped on ice about four times now.
Sure.
At this point, because we're going across
the
icy streets. We get to the shuttle bus stop, waiting for the shuttle bus. Meanwhile, to amuse ourselves, we notice, so it was like, because she's been carrying my poles, I've been carrying the heavy skis.
Mm-hmm.
She says, take a look at these poles. I said,
the carefully selected poles?
She lines the carefully selected poles to match our heights.
They're the same size.
They are the exact same size. There is no difference at all.
Is he angling for a tip?
Well, and so let me.
I don't know.
Let me. So when it's about the spiel, and the thing is, it's Colorado. You've got a guy working in a Colorado ski shop.
Yeah.
This guy is not half baked. He is fully baked.
No, that's a really good point.
This is a good point.
I guarantee he's probably out spending more time smoking weed.
You're so right.
Vaping out behind the shop.
You're right.
Far as that goes.
Yeah.
Okay.
You're absolutely right.
All right. That's
a
great point. So we figure out, we have a good laugh at that, a good chuckle over that. Mm. Finally get on the bus, get to the center village. Well, actually, we get to the West Village because that was the first stop. I said, let's just get out. Get on the lift. We take like a little mini lift onto like this very easy, right next to the ski school. So that'll tell you how easy this first run we took was. Nice, easy run, no problem. Get on the next lift, get a little higher up the mountain. Now, Sylvia, like I said, it's been 3 years since she's been on the slopes. Little difficulty. So in order to get onto the lift, you have to go through, like, it's almost like a metal detector, you know, and you go through this metal detector and it reads your card that you've paid for to get the ski pass, and it sends a little ding, 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 and the little gates open up like a turnstile and you can ski through, and then they close real quick and the next person comes up and these little gates hit you at like mid thigh level, mm-hmm. and the turnstile reads your key card,
okay.
and you get ding ding ding, and you go through. So I got there, ding ding ding, go through, turn around, look back, and this is the second time Sylvia's done this now. So she gets through, she gets the ding ding ding, the little gates open.
Oh.
But she's not quick enough to push herself through. She gets like tangled up in the little turnstiles as they go crashing back. She's got like one leg in, one leg out. I look up. The guy who's operating the ski lift is just laughing. He's bent
laughing.
Over, double laughing at her. And she finally, she gets untangled.
It is kind of funny because they're low.
Right, they're low.
So they're not going to hurt
you're
you.
Not, no, they're not. But you're not used to them. But they are, once they close, like they're rigid. Like they don't want you, like these ski tickets are expensive.
Yeah,
these
they
lift
are.
Tickets.
Yeah.
So she finally gets through. She's all flustered. The thing, we get up to where the bench swings around on the little lift,
sure.
and you got to be ready for it. But
those are a little terrifying.
She's on the outside. If you're on the inside, it's kind of swinging slowly. If you're on the outside, these are long benches. It's like a six person, and there's
really?
Nobody there, but it's like a six person bench.
Wow.
So on the outside, it's like coming fast at her.
Okay.
It hits her again, like in the back of the knees. She goes flying back. The guy has to like grab it, stabilize the bench so she can get on. And as we sit down, as it starts whisking us up the mountain, it's swinging now because he's grabbed it and stopped it. But the momentum is still going because it's attached to the cable taking us up the mountain.
Oh, it's really funny.
I got to bring the thing down. And she's all flustered, but we're fine. We get all the way up there. It's like a 5-minute ride up to the top. And we're laughing about it. We're joking about it. We get up to the top. Now, here's where we have a little issue. She's nervous. About how
well,
to...
Well, she just made two mistakes at the bottom.
Right,
I'd be nervous,
exactly.
too.
So she has got the fear of God in her. We get up to the top, and I lift up the little thing, so we're ready to go. I said, okay, put your ski tips up. Have your poles ready to go, and then we're going to jump off. We're going to just kind of just let the momentum of the bench take us off, and then we're going to slide down. We're going to go to the right. So she had already done this at the previous one, but that was a little guy. This is a bigger guy. The lift kicks off. She is flustered. She takes her ski pole, goes to jam it into the ground. She goes way off to her left.
Oh, man.
It hits directly under my ski. I go flopping down like a wet fish. I'm flip-flopping out. I hit the ground hard.
Wow.
I start sliding down, and all I see, and of course, there's nobody at the ski resort, but who is there? Somebody on the very next lift right behind us. They're on the next bench. So the guy is like, he's looking like, do I stop the lift? What's going to happen? There's like three people on the bench. They're getting off. They're trying to ski around me. Oh. Sylvia's down on the snow as well. She's embarrassed. I'm embarrassed. It was just like,
Come on. Now, was there someone up there that's working it, like a teenager or something?
Oh, yeah. There's another high teenager working it as well.
Mm-hmm.
But he doesn't do anything. Like, he's looking at like, he's, do I stop it? You can't just.
Oh, he couldn't.
He wasn't sure.
Yeah.
So I have to just kind of like scramble my way up. And so it was like, I'm sorry. I said, no problem.
So guaranteed too, you guys are also covered with sweat at this point.
Oh,
I was thinking that too. Yeah.
Which is also the problem because.
We got the nervous flop sweats. Yeah.
Then you get cold.
Yeah.
It's true.
Right. Then you basically get cold too.
Yeah.
Now, did you hear the story recently?
Yes. Tell it though.
No, what's this?
So there was a girl who was too tired to ski down.
Okay.
Right. Because
I think Sylvia could relate on our sometimes,
is that down. How this happens?
So sometimes it's late in the day, and sometimes like skiing down, it's not always the easiest to ski down, mm-hmm. right? It might not be the easiest path.
Yeah.
And so here's somebody who's basically, I'm tired, and the person's like, oh, just go down on the lift. And so this person went down on the lift, but they shut the lift down, and this girl ended up...
Oh, I did hear
and,
that.
And she ended up stuck overnight.
Was it an outdoor lift, or was it a gondola?
I don't know. I'm guessing it was a gondola.
Yeah.
Like, I'm guessing it was a gondola.
Because that way they wouldn't have been able to hear her.
Or they wouldn't be able to see her and that stuff too. So I'm guessing it was a gondola. But, but you know, she got stuck overnight. And I guess she was fine. I mean, they've got ski gear and stuff like that on, but still, to be stuck. And I guess for whatever reason, this person didn't have a cell phone or whatever.
Oh yeah, you would think that a parent or a
That's true.
A lot of different things that you do wonder about with that story.
Mm, yeah, so.
Oh, maybe she was just single. Yeah.
Yeah, it's possible.
Yeah.
We did have cell phones at one point when Sylvia and I got separated. I would stop at every... She was doing the old pizza. So the only pizza on the mountain was not the pizza we enjoyed for lunch.
Yeah.
But it's her doing the pizza.
Mm. Sure.
Going down the mountain. She skied just fine. She had a great time. And we did many, many runs. We were there for hours. But I would stop at every intersection, make sure that we would go down the same way. Well, at one, I guess I stopped a little too far to the right. She didn't see me. She took a left turn, and we got separated.
Oh, yeah.
So she called me, and we figured out. I said, well, you just go up that little run, and then I'll take this big lift up, and then I'll catch you, because she was stuck at the West Village, and I was at Center. So I'll take the long lift up, and I'll ski down and catch you at the West Village. So she does. She takes a little run up, and I'm in the lift at this point. It's a long lift going up, way, way up to the mountain. And it's me. It's a guy to my left, probably a guy in his 30s. And then to his left is a father and a son. Mm-hmm. And the son is probably about 12, 13 years old. And it is just silent on this ski lift. And everybody, it's a beautiful day. We're all just kind of zoning out. And it's like very peaceful and quiet, and it's just nice. And then all of a sudden you hear...
I know exactly what... I can predict what would happen. You've not told me the story.
Yeah. You hear my cell phone. I have the obnoxious Joan Jett, yeah. I Love Rock and Roll ringtone that starts blasting in my coat pocket.
Yeah.
And because it's in my pocket and it's zippered up and it's in my inside coat pocket, I have my heavy gloves on. So I have to take my gloves out. I have to unzipper my coat. And it's going on for like a minute. I can just feel the glare from my guest also on the ski lift as they're looking at me, and I pick it up. I'm like, hey, you're already down. Okay, I'll ski over.
Oh, I predicted, because what I get sometimes, I'll pick it up and it's a FaceTime, and she like, there's no millennial pause, if anyone knows what the millennial pause is.
Oh, right.
It is
right.
Full into like, like midstream, mid-talk.
No, this was just the annoying Joan Jett.
Okay, that's fine then. That's fine.
She just called me, no FaceTime.
So on Dave's, what I would say is, I ski with my kids. We took a 2-year hiatus.
Mm-hmm.
So I took the kids, I took the boys to slope.
Yeah, we did have COVID. You're right.
And I'm thinking, you know, blue slopes, green slopes. It's like this easy course.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, what's the difference? And so I took my boys. And it's like, it's blue. I'm like, it's blue. It's like, you just, you know, just do a few more turns.
Uh-huh.
Not a big deal. Because 2 years previously, they were skiing the blues. No problem. So one of my kids made it down. No problem. The other kid scared to death. We ended up having to call the ski patrol.
Oh, no.
And Peter went down on a toboggan. Nobody was happy. Dasha was unhappy because where were you guys?
Where is everybody?
And then you know.
But there is a big difference between the blue and the greens.
I mean, there is, but and that's the thing is once you can ski the intermediates with like no problem, you know, it's not. And there's a big difference in the intermediates. Like there's some places in the intermediates, it's only a little bit different than the blues.
Right.
But there are some shoots in the intermediates.
Well, that's the thing.
That are challenging.
Some sections, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. And even in some of the greens, like one or two of the greens, there are short little sections that are steep. So that would qualify as blues. But anyway, we had a great time skiing, and can't wait to do it again. Laura, how has your week been?
It has been good. I have just a short little story.
Good, because mine was way too long.
It was a little long, so I'm going to shorten mine. Yeah. Just kidding. No, but not really. I am shortening it. I had to take our big guy, Nelson, our dog. He's 12 this year, we think. And so I had to take him to the vet. So Nelson hates going to the vet. He gets very anxious. He gets upset. He gets all riled up about the vet. So I have to give him 4 trazodone, which is an anxiety medication.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
An hour before he sees the vet.
Yes. Four. We've amped it up. It used to be 2. That didn't do the trick. So we amped it up to 4.
It is 4 now. Yeah. So
prescribed by the vet.
Yeah. So I get him in the car because I've actually, Andrew, this is interesting. I've given him Xanax before because the doc has prescribed Xanax.
That's right. Yeah, the
and
Xanax.
That didn't do anything
did,
for him.
Did nothing.
Trazodone
nothing.
Works wonders. So I get him in the car. He rides in the back of my car, not the seat, but like the back, the hatchback. Oh no, he wouldn't go in. Sorry. Take that back. He used to. He refused to go into the hatch. So I got him in the back seat. So then I get to the parking lot there. It's snowing a little bit on Friday when I take him in. A little chilly. There's snow in the parking lot. And then that is when Nelson decides he is not going to get out of the car because his life depends on staying in the car.
Oh, no.
So he is refusing to get out of the car. So I open the back door. I open the front door. I have almost all four doors open, just hoping he'll get out any which way he wants, he can get out. And so I'm begging, I'm cajoling, I'm in the parking lot.
Now, Nelson, for those of you who don't know, is a very stubborn dog. And this is a dog who's so gentle, he won't even get up on the couch. Like, you can't get him up on the couch. If he doesn't want to go somewhere, he won't go.
He won't go.
He won't go.
No.
You take him for a walk, he's going to sniff that patch of grass
for hours.
For 15 minutes.
Yeah.
You cannot move him from that spot.
So I've got a problem, and I'm like, I know I need to get him inside this vet.
He's a big
boy. So then I hear somebody honk their horn at me. I hear a beep, beep. And I look, and it's our UPS guy. And he pulls his truck up behind my car.
I love our UPS guy.
And
he
leans out, and he goes, he doesn't want to go in, does he? I said, he does not.
Is he in his UPS truck?
Yes, he's in his UPS truck.
Oh, so he's delivering to the businesses.
We live in a small town.
Yeah.
And so it's our guy.
Yeah.
And then he goes, oh, he doesn't want to get groomed, eh? She's a nightmare. And he points to this woman who I now see is shoveling snow from her sidewalk. And there, right next to our vet, is a groomer's.
Yeah, there is a groomer's.
There's
right
a groomer's.
Yeah.
And
there's also the hot dog
and
Harley's
she,
Revolution.
And she right laughs there. And she like waves at him.
Yeah.
And she's a little sassy back.
Oh.
And then I said, oh, no, he's got to go to the vet. It's the vet he doesn't want to go to. So more laughter ensues, blah, blah, blah. He laughs. He says something funny. I don't remember what it is.
No, he's a very funny guy.
And he drives off. So he leaves us laughing. And in that time, I do finally get Nelson out one of the car doors.
Right.
So he's out and a woman goes, oh, isn't he the best? I said, yeah, he's great. He's our UPS guy, too.
He's a huge Nuggets fan.
And she goes, yeah. She said, do you know what his name is? And I said, no.
Yeah, I have no idea.
I don't know what his name is. And she goes, yeah, his name is Andrew Luck.
Whoa.
She said, so I like to tease him during football season about how crappy a game he's played.
That's funny. So those of you who don't know, this is a book podcast. Andrew Luck, famous quarterback.
Good point. Very famous quarterback.
A quarterback for the Indianapolis Colts.
You mean Drew Luck.
Who...
Nobody calls him Andrew Luck. It's
oh, they
Drew
don't?
Luck.
Does he go by Drew?
No,
they call him Andrew Luck. Yeah, yeah.
All right, maybe I'm thinking of Drew Lock.
Oh, you're probably thinking
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah.
But Andrew Luck, famously, everybody was in the Suck for Luck sweepstakes when he was coming out of college because he was a highly touted prospect. They were calling he was going to be the next Johnny Unitas. He's going to be the next Joe Montana.
Oh.
So the bad teams were in the Suck for Luck.
Oh, to lose their team so
they could
get him.
Trying to lose as many games so they could get the number one pick.
That's
and the
funny.
Indianapolis Colts got him.
I think his parents are well-educated and diplomats.
I think he went to Stanford.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. You guys know a lot more about Andrew Luck than I do.
He's retired now.
This guy has a pedigree for sure.
Unfortunately, he had injury problems for his career.
So I'm out there with Nelson. I'm loudly talking. So I had loudly talked with the UPS guy, loudly talked with the poodle vet clean, not poodle. It's like poodle grooming place. And then I go in and our vet tech is there. And he's waiting for me because he's clearly heard everything and watched everything from their plate glass windows.
Yeah.
And he's waiting for me at the little thing where they weigh you. They weigh the dogs. And he goes, he's my UPS guy, too. And like at his house, he said, one day I was sitting out front drinking coffee on my front porch. And the guy comes up, like shouted to me from the street, hey, Sean, do you know who... And he like read off the name of like some neighbors of his. And he's like, I'd never talked to the guy before. I had no idea he knew what my name was.
Wow. That's
yeah.
So funny.
He's like, he's so friendly. Isn't
he is
that
so
weird?
Nice. I remember when he showed up one day with a beard and
he
happily exclaimed, how UPS finally let them grow a beard.
Oh, well, like they're the Yankees.
So yeah. I can see an idea for a book where you have like a psycho UPS driver.
I mean,
think about the shenanigans that an individual could get up
to. I see this guy, though. I'll be driving through the neighborhood and I'll see him just laughing and having a great time with
he's
different
always
people.
Stopping and talking. Now, one time I talked to him and I said to him, I said, hey, how's it going? We always chat about the Nuggets. Great guy. I said, hey, how's it going? He said, because we're always getting packages. We're lucky enough to get books delivered to us. So he's always delivering books to us. He says, well, do you really want to know?
Oh.
I said, okay, I guess so. He said, well, now at UPS, they are following us around. So he said he'll be out on his route. He'll look back, and there are people in a truck following him with stopwatches, checking up on him.
Because he's a chatty Cathy.
I don't know if it's that or if they're just tracking times, and because it's all, you know, time.
Him at all.
You know, I don't know, but
thing is,
he
like,
said it's not a very happy workplace.
Well, everything's tracked. Like, they have a timestamp when they drop the package off. I mean, I don't know why they need to follow him with a stopwatch.
They said they were following him with the stopwatch.
That is terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, it was like, you know, I'm not a big small town person, but I like our small town because I think we're next to a really large metropolitan area.
Yeah.
Because I like the things that the large metropolitan area brings me. But I like the idea that we're a small town within that large.
It is great.
Yeah, it's really nice. I enjoy that.
I can't believe his name is Andrew Luck. Only played 7 seasons, even though he's in the College Football Hall of Fame. And it was highly, highly prized coming out of.
But I think the average NFL person only plays like 3 or 4 seasons.
I love that how we managed to turn this into football talk. Yeah.
So he took a team that went from 2-14 to go to 11-5.
Okay, no one cares.
No.
Andrew, I don't know. Maybe you do. Tell me. Andrew, how have you been?
No, I don't care.
So generally good. It seems like I might be getting an extended time off, but maybe we'll save that for next week.
Go back to episode 240 to hear more about that.
Maybe we'll save that for next week.
Yeah.
Now, Katie and I, we took a trip to Cabo.
Oh, slip of the tongue.
All inclusive.
He's taken so many trips recently, he can't remember where
it's true.
So... Now, on the way back, my wife books first class on the way back. Now, the thing is, I would never book first class. Never, never, never.
I had the money, I would in certain cases.
Yeah, I'm too frugal. It's like, screw that.
I don't know. I'd have to see how much it was.
So, she books first class. We're in the third row.
Do you want to? Are you comfortable with telling us how much a first class ticket costs?
It's thousands of dollars more.
No, not for this. It was like an extra $180 per seat. That's what Katie told me. And that's
Okay. It's no more.
It's like a 2-hour flight.
That's now, what Katie
what,
told you.
What the truth of the matter is, I don't
Who
know.
Who knows? Okay. Yeah, we don't need to go.
So anyways, nice flight. The first class is nice.
$18.
We could served a meal. I mean, the seats are big, they're comfortable.
Yeah.
Sure.
I've walked past it.
The lady in front of me, she immediately puts reclines her seat all the way back.
No.
Right? And so it's okay. It's just, but when I want to go to the bathroom, like, there's barely any room for me to, like, get out.
Yeah.
I probably have to climb on Katie's seat in order to go hit facilities. Now, this lady is probably 40-something. She is definitely overserved.
Uh-oh.
Oh.
Friendly, completely harmless, but she's definitely drinking.
Wow.
Okay.
Now, the plane lands, and maybe it's getting ready to land.
You're landing in Denver, right?
In Denver.
Okay.
And this big argument breaks out between her and the guy next to her, who obviously aren't together. Now, this guy's bragging about, you know, oh, I got $30,000 on this playoff game. You know, I'm a big shot.
Speaking of Andrew Luck.
I'm a music guy. Huh. I got $30,000 on this game.
A music guy?
Yeah. I mean... Just an obnoxious guy.
Yeah.
Well, this guy falls asleep, and he snores so loud, like, during the flight, that, like, all of first class, it's like, man, is something falling off the plane? Like, what's going on? And Kenny's like, man, that guy may be louder than you snoring, which right, is saying something. Because we heard it, and it's like, is that him snoring? It's like, yeah, that's him snoring. So, in any case, this lady had to get up to use facilities, so she had to shake him awake so she could get past him.
Oh, okay. Right? So he's on the aisle, she's at the window.
So he did not appreciate, and exactly right, Dave, getting woken up, right? So as we're landing, he starts basically claiming that she shook him so violently that she injured his shoulder.
No, come on.
I swear to God.
Oh, man.
And he's a piece of work.
Yeah, and and so she's been drinking, so she's like, oh, so that's how you make your money.
I just had that thought, too.
Frivolous lawsuit.
Oh, I had that thought, too.
Right? So this is all going, and he's like, I've already talked to the staff. They're basically going to arrest you when we land.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, and he is just going on and on about everything. Now,
and Katie, like, side-eyeing each other? Well, like, can you believe this?
And she's like, why won't anybody help me? Why won't anybody? Oh. And you can't get involved in something like that.
No, and meanwhile, she's a drunk at this point.
Because then next thing you know, that guy's going to sue you.
Now, she didn't deserve any of this guy's vitriol.
Right. No, I'm sure she didn't.
So, in any case, I wished her, I said, good luck.
Yeah.
Like, something like, good luck.
Yeah.
Now, this guy with the shoulder injury had no problem grabbing 40 and 50 pound bags from the overhead and taking them off the plane.
Wow.
And as somebody with injuries,
yeah,
right? I mean, if you got real injuries, well, guess what? Grabbing a 40 pound bag from the overhead.
Impossible.
Yeah. Was he a, what size guy was he? Was he bigger than her, smaller than her?
He was a big guy. Yep. I would say he's about 6 foot heavy, probably 300 pounds.
And so what do you think about her?
She was probably like 5'7".
Okay.
You know, medium build.
So she's not hurting a 300-pound man.
No. And the thing is, like, if we had seen her, like, she'd have to be, like, whacking this guy with something.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So clearly, I mean, she just shook him awake. So we're just like, oh, boy. And then now, as all this is going on, they make an announcement. Oh, it's the pilot's birthday today.
Oh.
And this is his last flight. As a pilot, he's retiring after 35 years.
Wow. Okay. And he's got a fight in first class.
So basically, there are going to be fire trucks lined up on both sides
of
the plane.
You are kidding me.
The Denver airport.
Oh, I know how they do that. Oh. Yeah.
And they're basically going to give the plane a bath.
I've seen them do this.
And it's fun. Yeah, yeah. Okay, so the plane, but it's like, you know, so we're doing all this and it just happens to be like, this is the guy's final flight, and he's got these wackadoos.
Two privileged wackadoos.
Now, is the pilot like standing in front of the crowd?
We didn't see him. He didn't leave the cockpit.
He didn't make an appearance.
Right? Yeah. And maybe...
maybe they warned him about the fracas in first class.
And maybe as part of that, too, it's just like, yeah, let's... You definitely don't want to get involved.
Wow.
You definitely don't want to get involved in that. But that was our little...
Did the cabin, like, applaud him? Or?
Oh, no. Everybody applauded the captain.
Was it
great.
Cool to see the fire engines on each side? That seems kind of cool to me.
It was. And then the fact that they dashed with planes. Now, these two couple who weren't listening to anything...
No.
And I call them a couple, but the two wackadoos. Sure. Just let me call them wackadoos.
Wackadoos. Yeah.
So the two wackadoos, she's probably thinking... my God, are all these vehicles for me? They're here to arrest me.
They're here to haul her away.
And he's like, oh, it worked.
Yeah.
They're coming to take me away.
Oh, he's probably like, oh, yeah.
So do they shoot water at the plane, over the plane?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh. I mean,
Have you haven't seen that?
I don't think
it's
I
pretty cool. You can look it up.
That sounds pretty cool.
So it's the first time I've experienced it.
I've never experienced it.
And actually be like, you know, on the plane. So it's
so
just like,
cool.
You know, and I wish I could have seen the captain.
It would have been nice for him
to say something to him as we come off the plane. But like, with all this drama going on, I can't say...
That is crazy.
How was his final landing? How was the landing?
It was smooth.
Oh, yeah. You know? Right. Good.
35 years in the business.
The exit door didn't fly open. Nobody got sucked out of the plane.
Nothing fell off the plane.
That's a good flight.
You didn't pull out Leslie Nielsen and pop in the cockpit and say, I just want to tell you, we're all wishing you good luck.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I got to see if I can find, like, an airplane inflatable.
Yes,
and if I ever fly on a flight with like empty seats,
auto
just park it in there.
That would be amazing. Yeah. That would be amazing. All right, guests this week is Allison Brennan. Her new book out is The Missing Witness, Book 5 in the Quinn and Costa series. This one focuses on Kara Quinn, a detective in Los Angeles who has to revisit a case that sent her life into turmoil by testifying against a real bad guy, someone who's a human trafficker, but then suddenly when the guy she's about to testify against is shot, the case blows up and a witness has gone missing. You'll hear Allison talk about the real life events that inspired this work, which makes it even more chilling knowing about. So here now, talking about her book, The Missing Witness, this is Allison Grundy. And who would be the witness? Who would be the witness? Who would be the witness when you're old, too blind to see?
Good. You look like you're in an interesting room.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So I'm a high school theater teacher here in Denver, and this is my theater classroom.
Oh, awesome.
Yep, and you can see up on the walls there, we have the posters from all the productions we've put on over the years, and yeah, it's nice.
Very, very cool.
it's homey. We like it. Got a nice play space. We were just doing some improv this morning, first period, and man, I just love my job. I just come in here sometimes. I sit down and we play improv games, and I just laugh. It's so much
fun. Oh, that's great. Yeah, my one of my kids is doing student teaching this year, elementary school.
Oh, wow, really?
Oh, yeah,
elementary school.
She likes the little kids. She's in third. She's doing third grade, but she wants to go younger.
That's amazing.
So in Phoenix.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Very good. My daughter, she's going to university next year. She's a high school senior, but she also is going into elementary education, and she's very excited about it.
Oh.
Yeah. She works.
Yeah. My oldest daughter is a cop, so I have a cop, and then I have a teacher.
All the civil servants.
and my son works for the federal government. So,
well, one of them's got to be a disappointment. So, you know, that's
okay. Well, I accept that he has a really good job in computers. So it's like he's the one making all the good money.
Yeah, I bet he is. I bet he is. So you're in Phoenix?
Yeah, we're just North Phoenix.
And I hear you are a big baseball fan. Are you not? Big San Francisco Giants fan? Is that true?
Oh, yeah. I love my Giants, although I'm a little disappointed with them this off season.
They not unlike my Orioles, they have not loosened up the purse strings and gone after any free agents, have they? Yeah.
No, I think we got one pitcher. We got Jordan Hicks. I don't even remember what team he's from. You're in Denver. So I got my mom for Christmas. I usually get her like tickets to something that we could do together because she's 78. And so, she doesn't need anything. So right. For Christmas, I got her a trip. We're going to go to see the Giants play the Rockies in May.
Oh, that's
so, true. You know, what? Because, you know, what do you do? It'll be fun. Hopefully the weather isn't going to be too cold.
Early May, did you say?
I think so. Is that cold?
It's either going to be 8 inches of snow or it's going to be 70 degrees and delightful. So, you know, it's a toss up either way. We always get one big snowstorm in early May. I'm just warning you.
I might have to change it to when they play them in, I think it was August. August.
Well, either way,
I could change. I didn't buy the tickets.
That's good. Either way, you are guaranteed a Giants win, so that's good because they're playing the Rockies. And
not necessarily these days.
Oh, that's true. But we'll see. But anyway, listen. Thanks so much for joining me. Appreciate you taking a little time out to chat. I loved your new book, The Missing Witness. Allison, what was it that inspired you to write this latest installment in the Quinn and Costa series?
To go back, so the Quinn and Costa series started with a serial killer in book one, and one of my main characters, Kara Quinn, she was on leave. She had arrested a human trafficker who was importing Chinese women to work in his factory. And she, you know, investigated him, arrested him, but he put a hit out on her. So her LAPD said, hey, you need to take some leave. And she ends up working for the FBI for the last 8 months. And that was the first four books of different cases that they were working on. Well, this book takes her back to Los Angeles to testify against the trafficker that she put, that she had arrested. He is basically filing. It's funny, slight digression. I had to talk to a bunch of attorney friends of mine because I know nothing about the legal process to say, okay, what is the process if somebody's arrested for this major crime and da 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 da. I went through all these things. And so I picked one of the options, which was that he is filing to basically dismiss the case.
Right.
And so the DA says, you have to come and tell the judge why we can't dismiss this case, that we need your testimony. So she ends up going, but on his way to on David Chen, the suspect, on his way to the courthouse, he is shot and killed in broad daylight. And that basically starts the story, because it's like, okay, why is he killed? And it was funny. I wrote a thing up for my blog, Murder, She Writes. I did a story behind the story.
I saw
and
that.
I had said in that. Yeah, I love doing those things. That basically, I got to the point when I killed him. I said, oh my gosh, I have no idea who killed him or why. And so I had to like stop writing for a while and figure it out. And that was when I decided, you know what? I like writing about graft and corruption because it's real and it happens all the time. I worked for the California legislature for 13 years. I understand how governments fund things. I understand how easy it is to defraud the system and how blind, honestly, the auditors are, because they don't know what they don't know. You know, they can't possibly, well, they could if they wanted to, they could audit all the funds they give out. So I did a deep dive into what it would take. And I decided, because the homeless crisis is such a major issue and something that I have been following for years, I decided, you know, I'm going to dig into this. And so I interviewed a lot of people that have done far more research than me, that have written books, that have written articles, that have researched, that actually work with the homeless to find out exactly what the problem is. And so, you know, this isn't me being on my soapbox. I don't write political commentary in my books. I really try not to go, but I felt that because the homeless crisis is a humanitarian crisis and something we all need to be concerned about, and the fact that the state of California has spent $12 billion with a B dollars every year on this, that there should have been progress. That, so where did all the money go? And that was kind of what I said, okay, well, here we go. Now I'm going to figure out where the money went fictionally. And unfortunately, there is a lot of truth to what I wrote in terms of the cost per unit of housing. That was all based on actual government documents. I read city council transcripts. There is a project in Santa Monica that really does cost over $1 million per unit. It has not been built yet, but they've already given tons of money to the project, sure.
They have to make plans. Come on.
Yeah, they have permits and buying land and environmental impact reports and all this kind of stuff. That's all been funded. So when it all gets done, it'll be over $1 million a unit. And so I said, when I read that article, I said, I got to use that in a book someplace. So that was kind of where I was going with it. But ultimately, the story is really about how a whistleblower, who Violet, who we meet in the very first chapter, how she kind of jump-started this investigation, not really knowing what she was doing, but wanting to help. And so through her, she is an IT person in City Hall. So she basically dug deep into a lot of the records and realized that there were things missing, and that ultimately puts her in danger, and therefore she becomes the missing witness.
The missing witness, of course. It's always nice when you have people, you have lawyer friends that you can just call up. And because we talk to all these authors, and a lot of them just get online and do research, and they go down rabbit holes, or they, you know, check out, like one author would like check out just stacks of books and read books. But it seems to me the best way to do it is just to talk to people who know about it, and that way you can engage in a nice back and forth.
I absolutely believe when I interview people, it is far superior than reading books. I mean, and I have a lot. I mean, I have, let's see, 3 shelves of research books back here. Wow. Where I can go and look things up, like, you know, the rate of decomposition under certain weather temperatures and things like that. I mean, I have all these great books I could do. I have a book of poisons I use all the time because, really? You know, oh yeah, I love using poison in books.
Of course. Poison is fun when you're writing about them.
Oh yeah. But when I much prefer talking to people, because everybody has a different experience. Mm-hmm. So I have an FBI contact. I have several law enforcement contacts. I have lawyer friends. I made a major mistake in one of my first books I ever wrote, a medical mistake, because that's the one thing I didn't have a lot of doctors and nurses to call.
Oh, no.
I made a major medical mistake, and I had a nurse email me and said, I threw your book against the wall because I can't believe you said da-da-da-da-da-da. I'm like, oh, my gosh, what did I say? Apparently, I don't know a lot about drugs. So when I had a cesarean section, I was given Vicodin, you know, because that's like you're in pain.
Right.
And so I'm looking at my old prescription of Vicodin. I'd only taken like three because it made me sick. And I'm like thinking, okay, 100 milligrams of Vicodin, Valium. They're both depressants or whatever. I don't know. They start with a V. And I kind of used my bottle of Vicodin as in the book. And I learned that less is more. I didn't actually have to give milligrams in my book to
one
prove
cares.
My point.
Right. Yeah.
No one cares except a nurse. I learned that the hard way. So now I will actually, a cousin of mine who after my first book, she married my cousin. So that's how we got to know each other. She is an emergency room nurse in Alaska and she has read all my books. And so I say, hey, Dee, can I just call you anytime I'm really stuck and I have to have a fact.
Yeah.
And she's actually read some scenes for me to make sure that they were accurate. But I do go with the less is more. I try to say, if I really don't know, or if I'm just guessing, I'll just make a statement that my character, you know, this is what it is. And I don't have to go into the details about it, but I do like interviewing people. I've been on ride-alongs. I've toured Quantico. I've been to the morgue and viewed an autopsy. It's a lot of fun.
What was that like for you? Now, did you have to, you know, and if you know, always in TV shows, they put the little stuff under their nose so they don't smell, or you're shaking your head.
I think that is not really for the autopsy. So if you're at the morgue, their ventilation system is probably the best in the world, you know, probably because, you know, they're dealing with bodies. And so they have a really good ventilation system. You mostly smell like the chemicals. Like in the room and the cleanser and because they clean those places extremely well and everything is stainless steel. You know, so there's a slight smell, but it's not bad unless they're dealing with like a severely decomposing body. But somebody who is newly dead, you know, that was shot and killed or something, it's really not bad at all. I did ask the forensic pathologist. So when I went to view the autopsy, it had been a murder victim. And that, you know, that was interesting just seeing what they did and how they processed it. It is a lot like the movies, just not as exciting. It's a little bit more boring.
Yeah, sure.
You know, they do a lot. They do a lot of things. You know, they have a checklist. They do everything that you hear about in the books. Like, you know, they weigh the body and they'll weigh the organs and they'll determine how the person died and all that stuff. But I said, I really need to see a body that is found in the river. This is when I lived in Sacramento. And I said, I really need to see a body. So if you ever get a floater, would you let me know? And can I come down and view the body? And a few months later, he did. So I went down just so I could see. Because I wanted to describe it realistically.
Sure, the best way. You got to see it in person.
And, you know, sometimes when you Google things and you watch videos, it's not what you expect to get. And so I'm very wary sometimes of using Google. I mean, some things that you do, you get things you definitely don't want to see. And I was like, oh, great. Now the government's going to come down my throat because I like clicked on this link on how to, you know, cook meth. And there's a lab right there.
Yeah, you got to be careful. I would assume you had to be extremely trepidant. So let me ask you this very cautiously. What did that dead body look like when you got your eyes on it?
So the floaters, because of all the biological floaters, the biological matter, they're in a special protective, they're in a special room in the morgue, and they were in a special kind of, mind you, I wrote this book like 12 years ago. Right. You know, instead of like a body bag, they have a special body bag for biohazards.
Oh, really?
So nothing can leak. You know, like a body bag, you see they zip up, but things can get out.
Sure.
But so it's a special biohazard body bag because of the decomposing body. And and it's funny because it depends on what kind of water, whether they're in the river or the ocean. and everything. Ours was in the Sacramento River that I had, Sacramento or American, I can't remember where they found them. But they really do, they bloat and they can turn green, and they can also, you know, because of all of the chemicals in the body that essentially go to the surface of your skin. But they could also be white. This one wasn't. This one was definitely green and molted and swollen. But I wanted to know, and I wanted to know, and it worked for my story because he had been found within 24 hours. And in my book, the body had been just under 24 hours in the river. So it helped.
I just had a memory. I was working at I'm from Maryland originally. I was working on the Chesapeake Bay at a marina, and we had a boat come in, and they had found someone drowned in the Chesapeake. Mm-hmm. And they had the body like strapped to the side of the boat as they were bringing him in. I walked away. I didn't want to. Like, my buddy all over it. He was all getting up close to the body. I said, no, not for me. But if you want to write about it, you know, you gotta lay your eyes upon it.
Well, I also like the research. Not every writer wants to go out and do it, but I enjoy it. And I think it lends a little bit of authenticity to my books.
Yeah.
I want to have that. You know, I write fiction and I write to entertain. That's first and foremost, that's what I do. Mm-hmm. But I also want to make it as real as possible so people could think, oh, this really might happen, you know?
Yeah. Well, and I appreciate it because I didn't know a lot about this whole government funding situation with the homelessness in that's going on in California. And that's how I want to intake my information. I don't want to read scholarly articles. I want it with a dash of entertainment, with a dash of fiction, but knowing that I'm getting real. So I found the book really eye-opening, and I learned a lot from it. So I appreciate the way.
Well, thank you. It's not just California either. It's all. So my friend Kevin, who I dedicated the book to, uh-huh. He's a social worker, and he's actually works in Oregon. And so a lot of what I learned about, I learned from him and mm-hmm. how he dealt. He worked in Seattle with the homeless. And then he also worked in Portland. So he's seen two major cities that have major problems. And a lot of what I learned about how nonprofits operate, I learned from him. And in terms of the lack of transparency, the lack of accountability, they don't have to justify where their money goes. And apparently the government just keeps giving them money. And if I was a government, if I was responsible for taxpayer money, I would want to know where every dime went and what good it was doing. Because yeah. We do need to fix the problem. We right. do need to do something. So, but just to give money and not expect solutions. That is what it's bothered me for years. So when I found the right story, and that's another thing being about being a writer is sometimes you might want to write about something, but it's not going to fit in every kind of story that you're writing.
Right.
So with this one, it was like, oh, this is the time I can tackle this issue. Mm-hmm. And ironically, it came at a really good time because it's on the forefront. The homeless problem is on the forefront of everybody, because there has been some exposure to waste and fraud and the increase in people on the streets and the fentanyl crisis, which is, you know, my daughter, the cop, tells me a lot about what's really going on there and how absolutely devastating it is. In fact, Kevin, the social worker, said fentanyl has essentially replaced all other drugs on the street. Heroin used to be a major problem, but now if you buy marijuana on the streets, it's going to be laced with fentanyl. Man. And because fentanyl is so hugely addictive, they're basically creating addicts. It's very, you know, being Gen X, you know, it's like, it's totally different back in the 1980s and early 90s than it is today.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I was like, I don't know. And I think a lot of kids, like teenagers, get addicted without even realizing they are, because it's like, you know, their buddy has a little bag of pot and it's like, oh, it's no big deal, da da da, it's legal, you know, but they don't know what they're getting.
Right.
But the DA has done tests, and almost every all the drugs sold on the street are laced with fentanyl now. Wow. Even if it's just trace amounts, because it is so cheap, and they bring it in through the border, they mass distribution, and it's deadly. And people get addicted and they don't even realize that they're getting addicted. And I think that's why a lot of these younger people are becoming homeless, is because they're just waiting for their next
fix.
Yeah. So I did try to tackle it by being authentic. And, you know, it was interesting when I first started writing the story, I didn't have Violet's character as her own chapters. I wrote her originally in like third person, that she was just another character in the book. And I said, you know what? I want to personalize this, and I'm going to write her chapters in first person. And it's the first time I've done that since, I think I did it in one other book where I did the villain in a first person point of view. But I felt I wanted to humanize her as what she was doing and why she became a whistleblower. And also because we were now looking through the crisis through her eyes, as opposed to just me as the author stating, she walked down the street and saw these tents and whatever. I could actually make it a little more personal.
Yeah. And I felt that from the get-go, from the opening chapter, when, you know, we get to hear things from her perspective and, you know, the problems that her mom was having, and that really brought it home. And I know the substance abuse and addiction is just a horrible issue that's going on. And I thought that was a great way to tackle it.
The Inside Flap.
This is our segment, Allison, we call Quick Six. These are six quick questions in which we find out just a little bit more about you. So strap in, get ready, and don't be scared. Number one, what is the last show you watched or binged and really enjoyed?
Percy Jackson.
Oh, okay. All right. Very good. How about this? What fictional world or place would you like to visit?
Oh, probably the future Eve Dallas series, the J.D. Robb series. It takes place in New York City in the future. And I would really, really like to check out that.
Oh, that's a good one. We haven't had that answer before. I like that one. How about this? Give us one of your favorite movies of all time.
Oh, well, Star Wars, hands down. Anything in the Star Wars universe, I absolutely love. But then I'll also add this. I was just telling my son, who is 22 and hasn't seen Casablanca, that he has to see Casablanca because that's one of my all-time favorite movies. And he says, but it's in black and white. And I said, I don't care. Watch it.
That's great. I was just trying to get my daughter to watch Airplane, and she keeps resisting. Oh. But it's not in black and white. Come on. Yeah. Yeah.
All my kids have seen Airplane at least 10 times.
Good. Good for you. Well, you're doing something right. You're raising them well. How about this? One of your favorite books of all time?
The Stand by Stephen King.
Yeah. I'd have to agree. But now, are you going to go the uncut version or the edited version?
Unabridged. I have the full 1,200-page book on my shelf. Yeah.
Nice. Very good. And how about this, Allison? Do you have a go-to karaoke song?
I do not sing. I cannot sing. I would completely embarrass myself if I sang anything. So I'll pass.
Okay, very good. It was usually about 50-50 with authors. And finally, what book are you currently reading?
I am actually currently reading A Very Bad Thing by J.T. Ellison. It's an ARC. It's an advanced copy of her book that comes out in September.
Oh, great. I love her. That's awesome. Well, listen, I loved your book, The Missing Witness, and thanks for hanging in there through the technical issues, but it was really great chatting with you, and go Giants. Let's go.
I think the Orioles have a better chance this year.
Yeah. Well, things are looking really good in the Oriole landscape right now. All right. Very good. Allison, take care and have a great day.
Thank you. You too.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
The Inside Flap.
All right, thank you so much to Allison for hopping on. Check out her book, The Missing Witness. All right, let's open it up.
The library is officially open.
Time for some
book reviews.
And let's start with
Laura Medicus.
She comes from Silver Spoon, Golden Rule.
Now we got the new. Did you forget about your new
walk-up
music
forgot about
already?
It. Yeah. Completely forgot about it. I had no idea what that was.
Who is this group again?
The Red Clay Strays. They're from Alabama. So.
Love them.
Yeah, beautiful sound. Okay, so my book is Iron Lake by William Kent Kruger.
Oh, yeah, former guest of the show, a friend of the show, William Kent Kruger.
So this is the first book in his Cork O'Connor series. I've never read a William Kent Kruger book before.
Did you say the first book in the series?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And the reason I read it is free on Kindle Unlimited right now. And they said something about it being the 20-year anniversary, but I don't think that it is because I did the math, but maybe it's some type of anniversary of the first in this series.
Okay, so I have read a couple of books in the series. I love this series, and I love William
Kent. Oh, that's
Kent
great. Kruger. Yeah, I can see why. Mm. So I just immediately fell in love with this world that he has created. So the setting, the landscape, and the culture figure predominantly yes. in this story. Mm-hmm. So Cork O'Connor is half Irish, shocker with that name.
What?
Yeah. But he's also half Anishinaabe Indian and he's living in a small town near the Canadian border in Minnesota. Don't you know?
Don't you know?
So he's the small town's ex-sheriff. So when you're a small town's ex-sheriff, you got a little bit of baggage going on there. And it slowly comes out how he lost his sheriff job. So in the book, you know, I don't want to give that away, but you'll find out. Mm-hmm. So the town's old white judge, and I'm saying white because this town has a mix of Native people and white people.
Okay.
Old white judge either kills himself or is murdered. And a friend's son is missing who happened to deliver the judge his newspaper that day. And he went missing right after he delivered the paper. The judge was the last on his paper route, and he never came home. So Cork, who also, I can't figure out what he does for a living in this book. I'm not sure how he's making money, how he's existing.
All right.
It's never mentioned. Okay. All we know is he's not the sheriff any longer.
But sometimes you don't need to mention what they do for a living.
How many years was he a sheriff? Does it say how long he was?
Very briefly.
Huh.
Very briefly. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm trying to think back to that when I don't
know. He appears to be unemployed in this book.
All right.
Yeah, it's not mentioned. So he takes it upon himself to start investigating because he doesn't think the judge killed himself. And then the body count in this small town start to rise.
Oh, I love that.
So what I really liked about this book is the Native culture and the white culture together in this town. You also have Ojibwe Indians across the border. In Canada, there's an Indian casino here that's fairly new to the town. There's a couple of Indian casinos. I always find that stuff really interesting about, you know, how they get the land and grants and that type of money that they pull in. I found that just fascinating. There's also a great priest in here that has a mission on Native land. He's a very funny character, so there is some humor in this book. His nickname is Saint Kawasaki. After an old snowmobile that he rides around on, and they're like, oh, there's Saint Kawasaki again. So he's entertaining. It's set northern Minnesota, so there's ice fishing in here in addition to the snowmobiling. Cross-country skiing, there's fire-powered hot tubs, you know, where you actually have the logs and you...
Oh, wow, really?
Which is fun, always fun.
That is fun.
So I just really enjoyed all of that. And then there's an exciting thriller aspect to the story that's great, too. So this lead character, Cork... At least at the start of this series, I'm not sure how he grows as a person. He's one of those like quiet, strong types who's got a troubled marriage and he has a girlfriend, but he's very likable.
Yeah.
So I really enjoyed it. And it's called Iron Lake.
Great. Yeah. He is a great writer. A beautiful writer. He's got a real way with words.
Yeah, he does have a way with words.
Lyrical, fantastic writer.
Mm-hmm. But he can also write a good thriller because there's some exciting chase scenes in here.
Absolutely. Now, Andrew, speaking of fire powered, now, Andrew... Do you recall sometimes when we were growing up on Kent Island and my parents would go away for the evening, sometimes I feel like I'm thinking around New Year's Eve. We would do, and Mom, if you're listening.
Now, David.
Just cover your ears for a little bit. We would load up. We had a hot stove.
Wood stove.
An indoor wood stove.
It was hot.
In the living room.
An iron wood stove.
That's right. And we would load that sucker up with as many logs as we could.
Yes.
Got the inside of the house so hot. Just to see how that's basically
that's what you would do.
End of the story, yeah.
And, I thought there'd be something else involved.
And I think
story.
There's at least one instance where I would at least admit for myself that I would streak around the house.
Oh, yeah, yeah, we did. That's yeah. right. In the middle, we would. That's middle right. We get so hot. We'd suck off all our clothes and run around the house in the middle of winter.
That's really funny. Outside.
Outside.
Oh, that's fun.
Because we get so hot inside. Okay. I mean, we'd have the living room up to like 90 degrees.
Wow.
Yeah. Living on the edge.
That is crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was a wild life, let me tell you.
Those stoves, they get so hot.
They do. I mean, we must have been like probably eighth grade, ninth grade, something like that. Like,
it was maybe high school. I mean, I don't know.
25 years
old. We were 32 years old.
Yeah.
That's really funny.
Oh, good times. All right. So anyway, my book this
Dave
week.
Dave Medicus. It's a bonfire. Turn the lights out. I'm burning everything you motherfuckers talk about.
That's right. Thank you. Turn
the lights out. I guess fire must be the theme.
That's right. Yeah, there you go. That lends itself quite nicely. All right, so my choice this week is called Survive by Tom Bale, B-A-L-E. And this is a really an exciting thriller that is a thrill a minute. It is a tale of a family of four who go on vacation. Now, this is just not a family who goes on vacation all the time, not like the guy who's seated to my left right here who's always... hopping off to Cabo
Jetting
or
off.
Vegas. No, this is a family, a mother, a father, and two young kids who really can't afford to go on vacation. But from reading in between the lines in this one, it's one of those deals where if you fly away to this desert island, they'll help pay for it if you agree to go to these seminars where you have to listen to information
like a timeshare
about
type
timeshares
of thing.
And that kind of thing. So they find themselves in this sort of situation. They're listening to these spiels about getting timeshares. The father is getting excited. The mom, not so sure about it. The kids are there when suddenly something happens, and Sam and Jody are the parents. Something happens and they find themselves and they're not exactly sure. They get invited to a really fancy dinner at this this resort, this island. And then suddenly they don't know exactly what happened, but they wake up and they are deserted on a beach in this island and there is nobody around. And they have to figure out what, like, they don't know how they got there. The last thing they remember is being at this fancy party. Hmm. Now, here they are on this beach. And
what's the name
of this? It's called Survival.
Oh.
I'm sorry. It's called Survive. Oh. Survive.
And is the family together or is somebody missing?
The family, well, at first, they don't know where they're kind of separated.
They don't know where the kids are, right?
They don't know where the kids are. The dad doesn't know where the mom is. They finally figure out they're all scattered along this beach. They get up together and they have to figure out how to get off this beach. And there's more stuff that happens. I am not going to, and I think
I'm looking this up.
Looking
that
it up on Goodreads.
So
it doesn't
good.
Really say like what is going on, but I wouldn't read like you could read
no,
some
I
reviews
wasn't going
about
to.
It
yeah.
and it'll give away some stuff that you really don't want to read about. And I don't want to give too much away, but I can tell you this is a family you're rooting for. This is a kind of a structured around classicism as you have a lower class family and you have some upper class figures who factor into this and how they got there and how they're going to get out of here and how they have to use their wits to survive. Really just, I could not put this book down.
It sounds amazing.
It's a book you just kind of just dive right in and get into it and you can't stop reading it until you're done. It's a fun thriller. It's at times a little bit horrific, but certainly readable and so, so good. Check it out. It's called Survive. It's written by Tom Bale. And I know I'm not telling you too much about it, but I just don't want to give away too much. Just take my word for it. That is Survive by Tom Bale, recommended by me.
Dave Medicus.
Andrew
Dowd.
What do you got for us this week?
So before I get to this week's book, I would be remiss. I discovered something.
Oh, uh-huh. No. Okay.
About what? The book from last week.
Okay.
So the book last week was called Magic's Mantle by Bruce indeed. Centaur.
We had a long discussion and about
not
the
not safe
the
for
book
work
cover.
If yeah. you look yeah. up the cover art.
Yeah, if you look yeah. up the cover art.
NSFW.
So,
I mean,
unbelievable artist. But and anyways, I did not realize
about it. Yeah.
That this is a new class of fiction.
Oh, is it romantic?
No, no, no.
Oh, it's not romantic.
Breaking news whenever it feels like breaking.
Even more edgy.
What okay. is it?
Harem lit.
What? Are yeah. you serious?
Yeah, it's called harem. It's called harem
lit.
You
are kidding
yeah.
me.
Oh, we need to have Amy Del Pope.
You are kidding
I
me.
I don't know. We've, Andrew has
trust Andrew to find a new you know, class of book.
That's right. Thank you, Robert.
Yeah. Andrew, you're growing
and,
on us.
And mm-hmm. I don't know if it's this just this author or if it's
you're
a whole
right.
if it's a whole thing.
Fantasy novels, the harem lit subgenre.
Yeah, yeah. I had no idea.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, so I was remiss.
Okay.
I was remiss in not discovering it. So this week's
thank
book.
Thank you, Andrew.
Wow.
Not of the harem lit genre.
Okay. All right.
It's called First Wizard. It is written by Jeffrey L. Kohanic. It is book one of the, let's see, Dawn of Wizard series. Now, First Wizard, is this a coming of age novel? Yes, in fact, it is.
Oh.
And so,
is he the greatest wizard that has ever roamed the planet?
Does he have special powers?
You know, I don't know about that.
Okay.
Right? And what I will say is, I love this book. I love a good coming-of-age story. And this is a coming-of-age story of not just the main character, Ian, but also his brother, Vic. Right?
Oh.
And mm-hmm. and I, you know, I would say, like, when I think back to all the books I read, how many books were, like, really brothers? Right, as the main characters helping each other and stuff. And so I really enjoyed that aspect of the book. And so
and they get along, they're not at war with one another.
No, not
that's
they do.
Great.
They get along. They're really looking out for each other.
Who's the author of this one again?
Jeffrey L. Kohanic.
Okay.
K O H A N E K.
All right.
It is 498 svelte pages.
Under 500.
That's a lot of words. Yeah.
So the main characters, you know, and Ian is the main character. He is younger. He is small. He is weak. His future is uncertain because he's growing up in this small medieval town where pretty much most of the jobs you need to be strong to do most of the jobs. Blacksmith, you know, woodcutter, like you need to be strong. And it,
right.
and it's not. Now, Ian is extremely smart, right? And you know, as the book unfolds, you see how smart he is. But he just doesn't know what he's going to do. He's not overly concerned. His brother Vic is older. He is strong. He is well-liked. He's actually a woodcutter. You know, and they help each other out. And they actually, he's got a loving family. His mom and dad love each other. His dad is a carpenter, right? Makes sense. The son's a woodcutter. The dad's a carpenter. And so Ian is apprenticing with his dad, the carpenter, because it's the only choice he has, right? There, you know, and he tells his dad, like, this isn't what I want to do, but I don't know, like, with my skills, what possibly could happen. And so Ian ends up going on a trip with his dad to basically sell the first piece of furniture that he's made. The trip goes horribly wrong.
Mm.
And I won't say what goes wrong, but they've got to do, like, a two-day trip. They go there to sell it, and let's say they and somebody from a local farm go with them, but only the dad and the son actually make it back, right? And so, and Ian blames himself for a lot of what happened. Probably shouldn't blame himself. Now, of course, you think, well, what's going to happen? He's blaming himself. What's going to happen? But the small village, as they get back, has been attacked by dwarves.
Sorry.
Wow.
Okay. Sorry. Yeah. It made me laugh.
Well,
you
why? Why? just attacking by dwarves. Okay.
No reason, Andrew.
Yeah. So it's
just the
by
image in
know.
My head.
I think we know.
A bunch of little people.
Of smaller people, yeah.
Well,
smaller folk.
But the thing with dwarves is they may be shorter in stature.
They're fierce. And
they are fierce.
But, you know, they're supposed to have like 3 or 4 times the strength of a
magical.
Human.
We're talking magical now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, clearly. I don't think.
That's really
this is
funny.
This is not like a bunch of Baratheon Lannisters
that,
right.
No, that's
coming
right.
after
yeah.
me. Please.
Yes, okay.
Is it Ty?
Tyrion Lannister. Yeah, exactly.
Coming after you, and please.
I was picturing Tyrion.
My goodness gracious! Yeah,
yes. I really was.
Peter Dinklage.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, that's what I was picturing.
No, that's not what you should be picturing. So,
well, he was great in that role, wasn't he?
Oh, man, so good, so good.
So I won't go into too much details, but the entire town gets enslaved, and they basically have to go and, you know, and be slaves for the dwarves.
Okay.
Now, the dwarves do have honor, and not all the dwarves are happy about the fact that they've had to enslave humans. But in this world, everybody is in a desperate situation. The humans are in a desperate situation. The dwarves are in a desperate situation. The Dark Elves, desperate situation.
Dark Elves.
The Elves.
Wow.
Mm.
The normal Elves. The Green Elves. Also, desperate situation. Everybody's in a desperate situation.
Okay.
And so, there is honor among the dwarves, and there is a path to freedom for Ian and his brother. Now, Ian discovers he has a gift for languages, so even after a couple days with the dwarves, he realizes he's learned to speak their language, right? So, Ian is extremely smart, and the dwarves realize, you know, he can translate for us, so he becomes a speaker in terms of that. And then he ends up becoming sort of an apprentice to one of the dwarf elders, and he ends up learning different languages and things like that too. But again, there is basically a path to freedom. And like I said, this entire world is under duress. Like, there is something going on. There are things changing. There are things shifting. And this, you know, and it's a story of, like, you see, like, Ian and his brother Vic, I mean, they work together, they help each other. I mean, they basically have adventures. And I will say that, there are dwarves with honor, and, you know, Ian and Vic end up forming a partnership with some dwarves, to really help them out of a difficult situation. So, like, the way the book starts, it's not like, oh, they're slaves to the dwarves, and that happens, like, all the time. They do find a way out. They find a way to partner with the dwarves. Now, as far as the book goes, the book is funny. There are some sad points in the book. You know, the book is really a well-written sojourn. If you're looking for an escape, this is a good book for that. I think there's lessons learned in terms of, like, making the most of a situation that you're in. Mm. Like, they don't fight. Like, even though they're going to the dwarves, like, don't brutalize them. Vic finds he kind of likes being a miner. Like, he went from cutting wood to basically swinging a pickaxe.
Hmm.
You know, Ian, you know, didn't know what he was going to do, but being basically an apprentice to, like, a scholar, you know, probably not a bad path for him, right? So they kind of end up in really a not bad spot. Now, there's magic in the book. There is deceit in the book. Now, the book is called The First Wizard. So would I be giving something away to say that Ian ends up becoming a wizard in the book?
No.
You know, if that wasn't the title, maybe I wouldn't comment on it. But it's called The First Wizard. And what I will say is, you know, it doesn't really happen. He doesn't really come into his powers until the end of the book. And that's really when he comes into his powers. And, like, is he an amazingly strong wizard? It appears so, right? Like, because all these creatures have got magic, and this magic is very intimidating. Well, once Ian comes into his powers, it's basically like he's heads and shoulders above anybody.
Hmm.
And even the dark elves and the elves, they all speak with reverence for Ian, right? And they actually have different terms for wizard. Right, and the humans didn't even know that they could become magicians, or that the humans could have magicians. Oh, sure, the dwarves have magic and the elves have magic, but humans don't, right? But no, yeah, actually, the humans do have.
How about that?
So the
have you read the second book?
Well, and that's where I finished the first book, and it's like, okay,
I think there's only one book out right now,
and that's it.
Oh,
it's like the other book doesn't come out till March or May.
Have you read the second, the fourth, the sequel to the second and the fourth wing trilogy or whatever is out?
I'm pretty sure I have. I've read all those. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
So
just wondering.
What you see that book just about everywhere.
It's everywhere. Yeah, it's so popular.
You can't go to a bookstore.
No,
or the
it's stacked and stacked
without bumping into a stack of the,
yeah,
of that book.
Yeah. She's been really successful.
But you know, it's I would love to be reading that second book. I'd like to go home tonight, get in the hot tub, and start on the second book. And there, you know, there is a second book, but it's, like I said, extremely well written.
You don't want to drop that Kindle in that hot tub.
Yeah, do you read in the hot tub?
I do with
on
my,
your Kindle,
my cell phone. Yeah.
Oh,
your cell phone.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah. And so,
I'm afraid.
And I shouldn't say that. I've never dropped my cell phone in the hot tub.
Knock on wood.
You know, wood. Yeah, knock on wood.
I'd feel more comfortable. It's cheaper to drop your Kindle in the hot tub than it would be your cell phone.
But, you know, this first book is just setting up the premise for this world. Like, it's called The First Wizard, but this entire book is really just setting the premise up for Ian being a wizard. And the way it ends, it's like, man, you really want to read that second book.
Mm-hmm.
So, First Wizard, written by Jeffrey L. Kohanek.
All right, and that is recommended by
Andrew Dowd.
And that'll do it for us this week. Thank you so much for joining us as the audiobook of the week takes a well-deserved hiatus for a week. But what? Don't worry, it'll be back next week, as will we, with a brand new guest. We thank Allison Brennan for hopping on for this episode 241. Please check out her new book, which is called The Missing Witness. Until then, my name is Dave Medicus. See ya.
Adios.
Excelsior.
Two privileged wackadoos.